This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. It's good to have you listening today. Scott Walker was elected to another four-year term as Wisconsin governor yesterday, beating back a challenge from Trek bicycle executive Mary Burke. Polls had showed Walker with a narrow lead in recent weeks, and his margin of victory turned out to be about 5%.
We'll be joined by a panel of guests for some post-election analysis in just a few minutes. But first, we have two reports from the field, starting with WUWM's Marty Michelson.
As Governor Walker took the podium, the crowd chanted, "Four more years." He told his supporters he's proud of his campaign's positive message.
We were for a better Wisconsin, for better schools, for a better university system, for a better technical college system, for a better economy, for a better future for our children and our grandchildren.
Walker took aim at Washington, D.C. several times during his speech. He says he'll continue encouraging people to become more self-sufficient.
You see, the folks in Washington like this top-down approach that's old and artificial and outdated that says the government knows best. We believe that you should build the economy from the ground up. That's new and fresh and organic, and that's what we're going to do.
One person in the crowd was Republican State Representative John Nygren. He's co-chairman of the Joint Finance Committee and says he's excited to get back to work in January.
We're going to work with the governor and move an agenda forward of pro-job, less government, lower taxes, consistent with what we've had in the past.
Nygren says Walker's victory bodes well for his presidential aspirations, but it's a decision the governor and his family will have to make. Marty Michelson, 89.7 WUWM.
I'm WUWM's LaToya Dennis reporting from Madison, where Democrat Mary Burke held her election night party Tuesday night. People began filing into the Overture Center just after 8 o'clock, and from the beginning, the crowd was rather subdued. There was little reaction as some people huddled around televisions to watch the election results. Just before 10 p.m., the race was called in favor of Governor Scott Walker. Burke told the crowd of hundreds that election results and political fights don't matter nearly as much as Wisconsin. Wisconsin values. And she says Wisconsinites value people having a fair shot.
A fair shot means equality in pay and opportunities. It means women's right to make our own decisions regarding our bodies. It means preserving our great natural resources for future generations. It means the right for workers to collectively bargain.
Burke says a fair shot also means raising the minimum wage. Once it was clear that Burke had lost to Governor Scott Walker, many in the crowd began to leave. One of the more interesting sights appeared on a nearby sidewalk, the so-called Solidarity Singers, a group that came about during the fight over Act 10, stood outside the state capitol and sang songs in defiance of Walker. LaToya Dennis, 89.7 WUWM.
Two reports there from Wisconsin's governor's race. Other wins for Republicans included a relatively easy victory for Brad Schimmel over Democrat Susan Happ to win the attorney general seat, and Glenn Grothman defeating Mark Harris to win the race for U.S. Congress in District 6. So here to help us break down the results in the studio are Marquette University political science professor Julia Azari and Bruce Murphy, editor at Urban Milwaukee. And joining us on the phone from Madison is J.R. Ross from WisPolitics.com. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the governor's race, naturally. Did we see any trends that differed significantly from the ones at work in the two Walker versus Barrett races previously? And let me start with Bruce Murphy.
Actually, I think in a way it's almost a complete rerun of that election. And in a lot of ways, I think Walker was really just running against himself here.
You wrote that this week. Yeah. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think Burke was a really weak candidate. There was a St. Norbert survey poll that showed why did people back either candidate, and the reason they backed Walker was things like taxes, what he did on the budget. For Burke, the overwhelming majority of those reason why they backed her was because they didn't like Walker. So really, this was about Walker running against himself, hoping that the people who loved him would be more than the people who hated him. And in a way, it was just a rerun of the recall election.
And J.R. Ross, I'm not sure. Can you hear us? Are you on the line with us? We're still having trouble reaching J.R. Ross in Madison, but hopefully he'll join us shortly. But let me follow up with you, Bruce. Getting back to Mary Burke, was she did she run a weak campaign, or was it merely that she was just really not the Democrat that was likely to put up as good a fight against Walker as someone else?
Well, I think she was inexperienced. I think she was not a natural candidate. I don't think she's exactly an extrovert, and I just don't think I never really felt like I had a strong idea who she was, and I suspect a lot of voters may have felt that way as well.
Julia Azar, does that resonate with you?
Absolutely. Without a president on the ticket, Democrats have a difficult time getting people to the polls, and there's only so far that voting against somebody will take you as far as bringing people into the election, getting voters engaged. And the Democrats just have a natural disadvantage in a midterm year.
J.R. Ross, it sounds like maybe you're on the line now. Can you hear us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, very good. So we were just talking with Bruce Murphy and Julia Azari of Marquette University about the race that Mary Burke ran against Scott Walker. Bruce's point was that she was a fairly inexperienced and generally weak candidate. Did you see any trends that differed significantly from the ones at work in the Walker Barrett races?
Well, there are a couple of things. If you take a big picture view of this race, I heard a regular complaint from Republicans that Governor Walker was running a football analogy, a prevent defense. He knew he was up by 5 points, and all he did was prevent Mary Burke from scoring a touchdown. And people kind of complained, these Republicans, that he wasn't very aggressive, he wasn't doing more bold stuff. But in the end, if you look at it, it worked, because he's waiting for her to make a mistake. And there are two fatal mistakes, kind of my sources tell me, in this course of his campaign. One was the either called plagiarism or lifted passages, whatever you want to say, their jobs plan, that kind of halted her momentum. Then the story last week about whether she was fired from track, it really seemed to, she was starting to maybe bounce back a little bit, undercut any kind of getting her momentum back that she could have had. So those two things were, by playing prevent defense, he let her make the mistake because she was not an experienced candidate. Governor Walker obviously is. He spent most of adult life in politics. He just waited for her to make a mistake, and she did. And then the other thing is, Democrats needed big turnout in places like Madison and Milwaukee and to cut into Walker's advantage in the Fox Valley. Problems were last night, and I haven't really gone deep in the numbers yet, but Burke didn't hit numbers she needed in Madison and Milwaukee. And two, Governor Walker is rock solid in the Fox Valley. I've got to go through those numbers yet to really kind of get a good handle on them. But first glance, he did very, very well in Brown County, Winnebago, Outagamie County. Those are places that, if you look at the presidential map from 2012, Barack Obama held serve there, if you will, and that's why he won by 5 points in Wisconsin just 2 years ago, whereas you see Walker win by whatever it is, 5 or 6 last night.
Is this evidence that the vaunted Obama ground game only works when Barack Obama is on the ticket?
You're trying, if you're a Democrat in Wisconsin, you are trying to get people who their habit is to only come out once every 4 years to break their habit. That is very hard to do. You're talking about voters. I had a Democrat joke to me a couple weeks ago that they had core supporters who turn out every 4 years who didn't even know it was an election last night. And now he was being facetious, but just a little bit. There are certain casual voters who just don't pay attention. They don't get involved unless there's a presidential race on the ballot. And that is why Democrats have a problem in midterm elections. The other thing is they really, really focus on Madison and Milwaukee, and they do a very, very good job of that. They are having a very difficult time connecting with people in rural areas, outstate, where they need to do better if they're going to break this midterm curse, whatever you want to call it, where they are only winning now in presidential elections. Look at the assembly races. Now, one, we had kind of weren't really sure if that wave that we see nationally was going to hit Wisconsin because we kept hearing that, well, it's about Walker, not Obama. And that's why you saw a lot of even polls. But the wave hit. That doesn't help at all. But look at the assembly seats. There are seats that were swing to lean down that Democrats couldn't win last night. And there's a question of why. And part of the answer is you need to connect better outstate if they're going to hope to do better in midterm elections.
Chris Murphy?
Well, Well, I really think a lot of this is about the turnout. And yes, the Republicans had a better turnout. If you compare the total number of votes with the recall election, there was an expectation that this turnout might be as high, but it wasn't. And I think a big reason is that the Democratic turnout was not as high. So in a way, it reverted a little more to a classic midterm election where the Republicans are more likely to have a higher turnout. And I think you saw that kind of across the board, whether it was the state treasurer, the Republican winning in Dale Schultz's state Senate district. That was a district that Obama won by 7 percentage points, but this time around, a Republican won the district. I think it's all about the turnout. You had more Republicans turning out.
Julia Azari, this was actually a slightly closer race, I believe, than the last governor's race, the 2012 governor's race, and certainly much more contested, perhaps. More evidence of the deep divide here?
Yeah, so it's certainly evidence of the close divide. I think the issue here. Is that we've got a couple of uneven things going on in terms of Republicans and Democrats in midterm elections. So some of the groups that typically break for Democrats, women, union voters, these groups either are not breaking as hard for the Democrats as men and non-union voters are breaking for Walker,
I was just going to say, I mean, I think what we saw was a lot of the trends that held true in the 2012 race held true, but for a lesser extent to Democrats, and maybe for a greater extent to Republicans. The wins that Republicans had in 2012 were bigger in some areas, and the wins that Democrats had were smaller in other areas.
Well, it looks like the edge for Walker compared to the recall election was about 1 percentage point lower. It seems to me that a key group of voters in this race from the get-go was there was a sizable group of people who in the 2012 recall didn't necessarily agree with Walker's policies, but didn't believe you should recall a governor in midterm for that. So how many of those could be converted to Democrats? It appears not many, maybe a small group.
So let me ask all three of you, is there any doubt that Scott Walker's victory speech last night was aimed at an audience that extends past Kenosha or Eau Claire? Bruce Murphy?
I don't think there's any doubt. In the debate, he said he's intends to finish 4 years, his second term, and I don't think anybody really believed that. And I suspect he's already planning his run for president.
J.R. Ross?
He will at least dip the toe in Iowa, you know, starting sometime next year to get a feel for it. Now, he faces a number of challenges in becoming a real player in that primary process. But
what are those challenges?
Well, one, Governor Walker's claim to fame nationally has been what? He broke the public employee unions in Wisconsin. That made him a national hero for conservatives and gave him a national fundraising network, which are two very big benefits. But we're in a what have you done for me lately, you know, kind of political world. And so what's happened 4 years later? What has Walker done? He's cut some taxes. Job growth has been okay, but not great. If you're putting his record up against a Rick Perry, for example, of Texas, the job growth numbers are not even comparable. So he has some work to do there of saying, what else can he do? And if you look back at the last, since the recall, really, Republicans have kind of been a little bit unhappy, or at least less than inspired, because Governor Walker hasn't put more bold new stuff out there. Now, he put in his jobs plan, in this campaign, some things like drug testing for, you know, recipients of public assistance, those kinds of things, which are, you know, kind of play well with conservative circles. But what's going to be the big, bold Walker thing that he's going to run on if he does run in 2016? That's something he has to kind of figure out.
Julia Azari, I imagine, did you see echoes of or the precursor to a national push for Walker with this victory speech last night?
Absolutely. And I also think that the bigger picture of the Republican Party is important here. Walker checks a lot of boxes for Republicans. He has economic and socially conservative credentials, but doesn't really put off any one of the major wings of the party. So I think that the big question, the road test there, is whether he has these kind of intangible presidential qualities. And that's what we'll see in the next couple of years.
One thing about Governor Walker is, don't forget, even though he survived two elections with John Doe investigations kind of out there in the background, there is a major question about who he's surrounded himself with the last few years. And I can guarantee you that if he runs for president, there will be a lot of ads that mention the people he's associated with who have been mentioned in John Doe documents. That is an issue. Now, in Wisconsin, look at the Marquette poll. Most people here thought it was more politics, or politics as usual. But there's a national audience that really hasn't been exposed to that, and that would probably be a problem with for him. I mean, it's not usual you see people running as a social conservative with people who've got, you know, convictions on the record that they were close associates of his not that long ago.
This sounds like Illinois politics in a way.
I think it definitely is something there lurking in the background. It always depends on whether fellow Republicans are going to run ads against him. And I guess we'll see.
Now, in Walker's speech, his theme strayed into areas like immigration, which have not necessarily been at the top of the statewide political zeitgeist here. Do you think maybe he sees an opening among Republicans nationally on that issue? He spoke a lot about the American dream.
I think so. I mean, I think he's going to start testing what kinds of themes are going to resonate nationally. And I would add to JR's list the fact that, you know, he has been very prominent in terms of opposing Obamacare, opposing the increase in Medicaid federal money for that. And that distinguished him from a number of Republican governors nationally. It's more red meat to throw to Republicans in the primary.
And, you know, Governor Walker, one of his benefits would be he has been very adamant, not just this year, but going back to 2012 with Mitt Romney, that you have to provide a positive vision. Governor Walker has been selling that very hard, did it last night in his speech, about a positive vision going forward, that the R, he says this all the time, the R has to stand more for Republican, it has to stand for reformer, right? So Governor Walker would argue that he would offer the nation that kind of a reformer approach, and that the real solutions don't come from D.C., they come from governors. If the Republican Party goes with a governor for the presidential nominee in 2016, what's the list going to be? You know, Jeb Bush, former governor, Kasich, Christie, Jindal, Walker, he's right there in that kind of handful of Republican governors who are considered a real potential for the nomination.
Yeah, I think the immigration issue also speaks to the people that Walker might meet in the Republican field in 2016, because we know that those issues will come up in the event of in the event of a Jeb Bush run, where he's kind of tried to make that an issue where he might move the party to the center. We've also seen the Republican Party speak about trying to reach out to Latino voters and having some very prominent Latino national politicians, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz. So I think that's one of the potential strategies there.
On the other hand, Scott Walker couldn't necessarily hold up his connection with the Latino vote in Wisconsin as a great success story.
Certainly not. But I do think that the thing that really strikes me about Walker as a presidential candidate is, as Julie said, he does check all the boxes for conservative Republicans. He's got all the issues covered, but he doesn't come off as that extreme. He has a way of coming off as just folksy. And I mean, if you look at the way he operated in Wisconsin, he really tried to avoid all the divisive social issues and not speak to them. When he'd be asked about that, he'd always say, that's not a priority for me. Doesn't mean he wouldn't sign the legislation, but he didn't make it a big part of who he was about. It was all about tax reform and budget cuts.
Let me draw a comparison, though. Not too long ago, there was a former Republican governor of Minnesota who was kind of thought of in the same terms, and Tim Pawlenty's presidential aspirations never really got off the ground.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the other way of looking at it. I guess I think that Walker's a more adroit politician, but I will see.
Let's talk briefly about Mary Burke's future. She was not very well known statewide before. Does she stick around on the political landscape here, Bruce Murphy?
No.
J.R. Ross?
No, I mean, you know, she's obviously still on the Madison School Board, but after you spent that kind of money to run for governor, what else would you want to do? I don't really think she's somebody who would want to be a state legislator, for example. There aren't many seats open in the Madison delegation either, so I don't. Mark Buchanan's not going anywhere anytime soon for Congress, so I don't really see where she would fit in right now.
You don't see
now,
her as a Senate candidate potentially.
U.S. Senate, Russ Feingold is what everybody's waiting for in Wisconsin. He's the Democratic side. What's Russ going to do in 2016? If he doesn't run, Ron Kind has already made clear he's going to run, and maybe he even would if Russ does. So that ticket's already filling up quickly, and I don't know that she really fits there.
Julia Azar.
As much as I love to be a contrarian, but I can't disagree here. I just don't see a future for her in Wisconsin politics.
Some other races of significance. The attorney general race was contested through the fall, but Brad Schimmel ended up winning pretty comfortably over Susan Happ. Is there anything typically different at work when people vote in a governor's race and then move down the ballot to the AG's race?
Well, I think it's always about who's going to be tougher on crime. And I think there was a lot of charges and countercharges about that, and they both huffed and puffed. And it would appear that Schimmel won that, and I think partly with some fairly effective attacks on Happ's record. But I also think that this is part of a Republican wave. You can kind of see that in all from top to bottom, that the Republicans did pretty well across the board.
J.R. Ross?
A couple of things. One, we used to have this reputation in Wisconsin for being ticket splitters. That reputation is starting to disappear. Now there are pockets of it. Southwestern Wisconsin, where Howard Markline won that Senate seat, you know, he fought against the tied top of the ticket. But look at 2012. President Obama and Tammy Baldwin were neck and neck in terms of their vote totals. 2010, Governor Walker and Senator Johnson were neck and neck for their vote. The one exception, going back to 2002, has been 06, when Van Hollen won the AG's office, thanks to about $3 million, I believe it was, from WMC, in a year when some core Democrats weren't happy with Kathleen Falk for challenging Peggy Lochslager in the primary. So we're looking more and more like a straight ticket type state with the pockets of exception. And, you know, so you have that going on, the wave going on, and then, you know, just the pounding that Happ took. They both got hit pretty hard, but some of the charges against Happ seem to stick a little bit more than they did against Schimmel.
Of course, we'll point out that Doug LaFollette did win the Secretary of State's race for how many times is this?
Except for a four-year period, he's held the office since I was born.
But it's worth noting, he didn't win by much this time around.
No, not in 2010, too. I don't think he won that much either, but it's the name. The name kind of keeps him coming back.
It was a kind of an unusual race in Wisconsin's open 6th congressional district, but in the end, another pretty easy victory for the Republican, Glenn Grothman. Julia Azari, what are the takeaways from his race against Mark Harris?
So the main takeaway there is that it wasn't very surprising and it wasn't very close. The really interesting race there was actually the Republican primary, where the Republican candidates were really pushing for who could be furthest from the establishment, who could be the most conservative. And so I think that race is a really interesting insight into the internal debates of the National Republican Party.
And Mark Harris, in the end, tried to use that internal fight among GOP members to try to appeal to some more moderate Republicans. But that clearly did not work.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a district, remember, that Romney won by 7 percentage points, and now you're in a mid-year election where you have to expect that margin to be even bigger. So I don't see how Harris was going to win that race. The other interesting thing about this race to me is it's worth keeping in mind, Grothman announced before Petri, the incumbent, had stepped down. And he had run against Mary Panzer, a incumbent Republican state senator, beat her in the years past. This was a fearsome prospect, and I think it helped to convince Petri to step down. So, in a way, Grothman really is a big factor all the way on this race.
One other statewide issue of note, the referendum on the transportation fund won by a huge margin. Is that good news for Scott Walker as well?
Well, I think both for Walker and the Republicans, it's a way to say, we want to make sure that this transportation fund is not fiddled with, as Governor Doyle had done, and perhaps becomes a mandate to also try to increase it.
Do you get the sense, J.R. Ross, did people really know what they were voting for on that question?
Oh, well, I mean, it's really good news for road builders, let's be honest. They've got their own constitutional amendment to guarantee no more transfers. Now, note, too, that there's not a constitutional amendment guaranteeing no transfers from the general fund, which is made up of your income, property, or income taxes, sales taxes, those kinds of things. So there is going to be a commitment by Walker and Republicans to fund more roads. I mean, one constant in the time I've covered politics in Wisconsin is I've not heard many people say let's build fewer roads in Wisconsin. Both parties are pretty committed to it. So they're going to do very well in the next budget. The question is, where does the money come from? We have a gas tax that's becoming less stable in terms of a source of revenue. So will they pull more money from the general fund to pay for roads? Will they find a new tax or fee or what not to do it? That's the big challenge for Walker in the next budget is how to pay for it. Because I think some estimates are, what, $650 million is needed per budget to fund our current needs or wants, whichever way you want to look at it. So that's a big win for road builders for sure.
Well, I'll pay close attention to this year's frost heaves.
Yeah.
Julia Azari, we talked with you earlier this year about mandate politics. Let's look both in Wisconsin and nationally. Can you read mandate from the message of dissatisfaction?
Well, I think that the Republicans are certainly going to try. One of the things that struck me about this election nationally is that this change in the Senate that's occurred is kind of the only big change that we could have. We've had unified Democratic government. We've had split divided government. We weren't going to get unified Republican government in this midterm election. So this was the big change that could occur. And in fact, it did. So I think that gives the Republicans kind of a platform to talk about mandates for change. I also think that going back to the race here in Wisconsin, some of the most symbolically important races were won by Republicans. And I'm thinking there also of some of the close Senate races, like the North Carolina Senate race that Kay Hagan picked up in 2008, was a really important symbolic victory for Democrats. And to have last time I looked, at any rate, they had called it Fertilis. I don't know if that's changed. that was an important victory for Republicans.
Bruce Murphy, do you think is being not Barack Obama the same as Republicans having a mandate to do something?
Well, the real question is, what do the Republicans want to do nationally? If they do agree with Obama on certain kinds of legislation, does that end up just giving credit to the president? And so what's their strategy on that? Because really, this is all going to be about positioning for 2016. So I don't know what kind of mandate we have for anything here, and because it's really going to be about some very difficult negotiations between the president and the Congress.
Well, let me ask you this. In terms of positioning for 2016, how does that impact the agenda that Scott Walker sets for the state of Wisconsin in the next year or 18 months?
Well, I actually think they can claim a mandate. I mean, this is a pretty sweeping Republican victory. And it looks like the Republicans have increased by at least one their margin in the state Senate. And I've heard talk that the Republicans might want to consider passing a right-to-work law. So I think you're going to see them saying there's nothing to stand in the way of them doing whatever they want.
But J.R. Ross, do you think at some level Scott Walker has to look both in Wisconsin and nationally at how an agenda would play?
Actually, there are a couple of things. One, you know, how does the agenda fit in with his possible national ambitions? And two, Republicans have done very well in his midterm elections, but when I've talked to some other operatives, there's a concern that if you look at the two caucuses now in the Senate and the Assembly, they will come back more conservative than the ones we had in this current session. There is a little bit of a kind of apprehension of how they will govern because they've governed from right of center, a little bit more than right of center, the last few years. There's a worry that they go too far to the right, then there's going to be a cratering effect where they lose a lot of these kind of swing seats because people go, wait, that's just a little bit too far for me. So one question will be, what do they do? What do they not do? I mean, for example, Wisconsin Right to Life, one of its main priorities in the next session is a bill banning abortion after 20 weeks. Will they take that up? Governor Walker so far has said not a priority, but at some point they're going to have to confront those kind of bills. Right to Work, Walker says, not a priority, won't hit my desk. Can they hold back these new lawmakers who will want to do, you know, leave their mark, if you will, on the Capitol? Can they hold them back from doing bills like that? That's a big question for them. And if you have them go too far to the right, and then you have a big turnout for Democrats in 2016 in a presidential election, then you have some real kind of swing seats that could be in trouble.
I'm going to have to cut you off, and that's going to do it for our Bruce Murphy, J.R. Ross, Julia Azari. Thanks so much. More of Lake Effect after this.